Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon. This is J.R. Moore coming to you live from deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks on Sunday, the 12th day of December, year of our Lord, 2010. Welcome to the John Moore Show. Well, we've got a sunny day here deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks. It's about, 22 degrees. Got a light dusting of snow out there. It barely covers the ground. Maybe an inch, maybe a fraction more than an inch. Supposed to be about zero tonight. I hear reports anywhere from 0 to 5 degrees actual temperature tonight, and wind chills ranging 10, 15, and more degrees below zero. So we're getting a little dose of winter here. Of course, winter doesn't officially start until a week from Tuesday on the 21st of December. A little early for us. I don't believe this is breaking any records. However, north of us here in Illinois and Minnesota and places like that, they had their football dome collapsed in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, from the weight of the snow. I thought they'd engineered that to hold up a snow load. Obviously, the snow load exceeded the engineering of the inflatable dome that they built up there. It's going to cause untold numbers, tens of thousands of dollars damage and loss of revenue. They had to move the football game someplace else. Oh, well. As I say, oh well. If you're listening to my weekly show on the Micro Effect, you've heard me give multiple reports about what's going on in Europe with the weather this season so far. The United Kingdom is suffering from blizzards, what else to call them. As many as 500 gas stations, they call them forecourts, out of fuel, trains stopped. Traffic jammed up, just massive traffic jams. Paris, now Paris is usually has a winter probably closer to Atlanta, Georgia than anything else. 4 inches of snow virtually paralyzed Atlanta. Virtually paralyzed it. We've got a special guest coming up. I'll introduce him when we come back from the break. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 12th day of December. For those who don't know, who aren't old enough, that was the theme song from the massively popular television show from the early to mid-1950s called Dragnet. It was about the Los Angeles Police Department. Of course, we only had one or two stations back then. Before we get to our special guest, one of our regular guests, Dave from Canada, has three quick points, and we'll let him get in here and get his points in. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing just great, John. She's snowing like a banshee up here. We got nice 10 to 15 below zero, but in the international weather, people should tune in. 3 days down in London, southwestern Ontario, which is close to Wisconsin, Detroit, got anywhere from 39 inches to 6 feet of snow dumping.
Really?
Yes.
Wait.
What?
39 inches is just over 3 feet.
Correct.
Up to 6 feet?
Six feet. London, Godridge, Grand Bend, all the surrounding areas, they got a sweeper through. Yeah, they got dumped on, what we're usually used to.
Okay. Is that typical for the third week of September?
No, not down there.
Okay.
For us up here,
what were their typical? Because we didn't know the difference here. What would they normally have the second week of December in that part?
They can get anywhere from 4 to 6, maybe 12 inches at the most. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's what we know the difference. Okay. Go ahead.
Now we have Arctic air coming down as straight winds that you've been warning about, and when they go across our Great Lakes, like Lake Superior, Lake Huron, they pick up the moisture and then just dump the snow And that's what we're used to.
Lake effect snow,
Effect snow, and that's what we're used to up here in Hudson Bay, James Bay, the lake effect snow before they freeze over. But it's just like you keep on hammering, hey, get prepared with food, water, warm clothes, because it can reach down below to you guys, no problem. Now, one other point I wanted to make. Last week's, what a diamond show, John, with Mr. Hemming on there. And
well, he's a hoot, isn't he?
Hey, you brought him on. Now, I only have one comment. He prefers river creatures leather compared to rabbit because they don't last as long.
Right.
But I'm just saying to the people, look, I prefer rabbit inside, clean leather on the outside, only because 3 points. When you're dealing with open flame, open pit fire, you can run your gloves up your sleeves. You don't burn your sleeves. When you're feeding the wood in underneath the grate to cook your food, you don't get sparks and burn the fur off the top of your gloves and ruin them. You don't catch them on fire. Number two, you can also grab your pots, your pans, your cooking utensils without an extension, but with your leather mitts out there, and it protects your hands. Number three, when you're dealing with that, now I've just lost a point. Okay, just hold on for 30 seconds. Yeah, with the fire, you're good with that. Not burning the sleeves of your coats or anything else of this sort. Number three, I have very poor circulation in my hands. My fingers have been broken. My hands have been cut and smashed and crushed. So I need, like, wool inside, like you use on your feet and around your body to extract the moisture when you're ice fishing to keep my fingers warm. And that's, even though rabbit fur doesn't last very long, they act as wool socks on your feet, extract the moisture and keep your feet warm. Now, a solution for the people, if you cannot buy from a craft store, that's what I was trying to think of about 2 weeks ago. We have a lot of crafts up here. I can buy rabbit mitts for anywhere from $10 to $15, $20 a pair. If you cannot buy rabbit fur inside mitts with the clean leather on the outside to protect yourself in open pit cooking, like an oven mitt, what a woman would use in an oven, turn around and go and buy wool mitts or any sort of mitts, but buy a pair of welder's mitts. Heavy-duty welder's mitts, and they will act as the same thing. It's cheap, it's efficient, and guaranteed you won't burn your hands, you won't burn your coats or anything else of that sort if you have to deal with open-pit cooking.
Yep. I keep welder's gloves right next to my wood stove just for that purpose.
Yep. All right.
All right.
Yep, perfect.
Okay.
Hey,
is that it, Dave? Okay.
That is it, John. Have a great show. I'll be
Thank
listening.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, ladies
Bye.
And gentlemen, that was Dave from Canada, a regular guest, and patiently waiting in the green room is Lucas. Lucas is a very bright young man. He has a very quick brain. His brain put together the DVD titled The Destroyer Star and the Future of Mankind, available at worldwide web rabbithole2.com. Lucas has done some original research, pulling together things that have been right in front of us, us being everybody, especially archaeologists, for decades, if not centuries, and made some sense of it in a way that we had never been made sense of before. And without further ado, Lucas, are you there, sir?
Hey, how's it going, John?
Real good, real good. Lucas, now, many, I refer to talk radio as a classroom with a revolving door. Always new students coming in and existing students going out the back door. So there are many people listening right now, Lucas, who don't have a clue who you are or what your DVD is about and the research you've done to put this together. So why don't you start from the beginning so people can, just a quick summary of how this all came to pass.
All right, well, I basically started researching, alternative theories into things, JFK and all that long time ago, and then, the New World Order type of scenario. And I was kind of stuck in that, and then I started looking at ancient artifacts and things like that, along with governments and people making preparations for something, and kind of put together that you know, they were preparing for something. And then that sent me down a road that you know, I started doing more research into the ancient stuff, because I figured that those people had no reason to lie to us in the future.
Right.
So that pretty much summed it up for me, seeing all the ancient archaeology that's been suppressed. And you know, for instance, you bringing up those pyramids in Bosnia, I mean, that's a phenomenal thing.
It is.
I mean, think about the, you know, the Great Pyramid is, what, 560 feet, I think, and that thing was the world's tallest man-made structure all the way up until we built the Empire State Building.
Right, and right. That we were aware of.
Yeah, we were. You know, this thing being 2,300 feet tall, you know, that's amazing. That's twice the size of the World Trade Center and then some.
It is, and then of course we have that massive pyramid in China. There's a virtual news blackout. I would think the Chinese would want to set up some tours and tourists and get some income from having what might be the largest structure on the planet, that pyramid in China.
Well, I believe that most everything that you see that doesn't look normal, you know, that there's something wrong with the situation, that it just doesn't sit right in you. You look at it further and you find out it relates to this whole event in some way or shape or form. For instance, like in 2007, it's real interesting, somebody broke into the museum and stole the red slippers from the Wizard of Oz. And you didn't see that in the news. Hardly anybody knows about that. And that's a pretty big thing. I mean, that's a priceless item. You know, it was just basically taken, and nobody said anything about it. It was really, and then once
actually,
you look at
I think, it. I believe those were sold at auction not more than a couple of years before that theft. So there was a price on them. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying they were priceless in the eyes of a collector. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I suspected if a little research is done into it to find other things that have probably been turned up missing in recent years and haven't gotten the press that they should have.
Absolutely.
Well, anyway, back to what I was saying, you know, about how I got into this. I started looking and I saw that the militaries were moving their forces and relocating things, and the Vatican Library and all different kind of things like that. And then I realized that they're preparing for something big. And,
you came across all those things before you were aware of my work, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I started to put two and two together, you know, middle of 2008, when I started looking at 9/11 and saying, how could they leave so many holes open in this plot, unless they wanted to leave these holes open? And so the people argued about it. It was just another divide and conquer tactic, I thought. You know, you compare that with the Columbine situation. Those two kids in high school pulled off a more well-executed plot than supposedly these, you know, the 9/11 with all this money behind it. So to me, it didn't make any sense how that they could pull this off and purpose, I mean, and leave all these holes in the plot.
Right, right,
and
right.
It was just, you know, and that's kind of what sent me down that road, was why did they leave all these holes in the plot? What's bigger behind the picture?
While you were doing your research on archaeological artifacts and particularly petroglyphs, you came across a universal petroglyph phenomena that you found all over the planet, usually in high spots. Tell us about that.
Yeah, a spiral pattern, and it looks basically like, you know, like an electric stove top, I saw this pattern everywhere throughout all the different petroglyphs around the world. Mostly they were in, like, if you look in North America and South America.
Hold on. Lucas, hold on. We got a break. Everybody stay tuned. The call number is 800-339-9443.
Here's more of John Moore on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 12th day of December, year of our Lord 2010. Now, Lucas, you were going into these petroglyphs when we got the head to break. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, basically, there were these spirals located all over the world, and when they were mapped out, you found that the majority of them were located in higher mountainous regions above 8,000 feet, you know, and that, and areas like that. So what was one of the probably the biggest mind bender of my entire life was I started researching all these spirals and different petroglyphs of horned creatures. A lot of times there's a horned type of creature associated with the spiral for some reason. I haven't exactly figured that out yet, but so they show these spirals, and then all of a sudden the Norway spiral happened. Like, I don't know, I had my presentation done for about 3 weeks, and I had just shown all my friends the presentation, and I didn't really concentrate so much on the spirals as I was other things, but they were still in there, and I was aware that they were very, you know, prevalent around the world. And then that Norway spiral happened, and that was a mind bender, because here I saw exactly what these ancient people were warning us about in the sky. It was the 1 year anniversary just the other day, the 9th.
Right.
Happened 1 year ago. And so. Well, yeah, that was, and it also, you know, the people that I showed that to were like, wow, the spirals, that was pretty freaky. And so what happened is I showed the presentation to the owner of Brave New Books, Harlan, and he asked me to show it, and so I went ahead and did that, and it's become pretty popular.
Yeah, well, as I say, the rest is history. Now, you do offer this DVD titled The Destroyer Star and the Future of Mankind at your website, World Wide Web, rabbithole2.com. What's it cost for this DVD?
It's $32 with shipping included.
All right, and that's certainly a good value, ladies and gentlemen. It's an excellent, excellent DVD. Lucas, you managed to catch a couple of weather events on the West Coast that got past me. Tell us about those.
I didn't hear what you said.
Those storms that you observed on the West Coast.
Oh yeah, the storms. Yeah, there were a couple of amazing storms coming down off of the out of Canada, out of the Arctic, down into the United States, and I saw two of them that seemed to have a formed eye like a hurricane, which I haven't. You know, I've been looking at the weather for a long time, and I haven't seen storms of that magnitude with an eye like that coming down from. You know, coming north to south from the Arctic down into the jet stream. And this year has been a very weird year for Texas weather-wise. It was a very super mild summer. I mean, it was great summer here this year. And now the winter, we're going down to 20-some, like 21 tonight, and it's already been down below freezing a number of times, and that's just not normal for this time of year. That's usually January, February weather around here.
What would the low temperatures typically be the second week of December?
Well, Texas is weird. Since it's a big, giant plain for the most part, it's really hard. There's no mountains around here that keep the weather regulated or anything. So sometimes it could be literally 85 degrees, and sometimes it could go up to 41, during that time of year, but for the most part, it has been much more mild for the whole year.
Well, good. Good. I'm really glad to hear that. We had just the opposite here in the Ozarks. We had about 7 weeks straight of high temperatures from between 90 and 100 degrees. It was brutal for people in this area. Well, Lucas, what's next on your agenda? What research project are you working on now?
Basically, just focusing mainly on the ancient stuff, most of the current stuff. Since I've come to the realization that I don't even believe the elites, even though they've spent their entire bloodlines and fortunes on trying to figure this out, I don't really think they know much more than me or you do, other than the fact that there's going to be an event, and it's caused by an object in space. It's probably going to be flooding and heat-related. And, so I've been trying to research the ancient stuff because they went through it. Trying to put two and two together with the Bible and the Quran and all different texts and ancient books like the Book of Josephus and things like that. And, I mean, there's so much wealth of information out there that exists that, it's right in front of people. You just got to get it and put it together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I know for a fact that these archaeological digs, if they find something that's really, probably one of the best examples would be the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Rockefeller Foundation got their hands on those, and there's been very limited access ever since. The really good stuff they keep for themselves and give us either limited access or no access at all.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's, they don't want to let the cat out of the bag too early. And you know, I have to agree that this information needs to go out filtered in a way to a point to where you just can't go on the Fox News and tell the public this situation because everybody would lose their mind. I mean, it would be mass chaos. Before we even got to the main event, society would already be collapsing. I mean, I think it's amazing that they've been able to hold this economy together with sticks and stones and duct tape for all these years.
Right.
I mean, that's an amazing feat in itself.
Yeah, chewing gum and Band-Aids, I know. Well, they have, and they will continue as long as they can. This winter, I think, Lucas, winter 2010-2011, this coming winter, it's going to be extremely severe, I believe. And we got a break. Oh, Lucas, hold on. Call number is 800-313-9443. Stay tuned. J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 12th day of December. All right, Lucas, where were we before the break?
Hey, that was one of my favorite theme songs of all time from the Rockford Files.
Well, when I was getting my training to be a private investigator in 1973, that show was being shown as a new series, you know, new episodes. And my instructor, my private investigator trainer, he was driving the exact same Camaro, even the same color that Jim Rockford was driving. So I thought that was kind of neat. You know, it was a Camaro.
Yeah, I used to watch that show a lot as a kid and Dragnet.
Okay. Anyway, let's get back to archaeology and related matters. You mentioned to me, and I went and looked myself, and you're right. Google Earth has some images blocked out in the Caribbean between Florida and Cuba. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's where ancient Atlantis existed, between the Caribbean islands, all throughout the southern United States and northern South America. I think that all that was Atlantis a long, long time ago, and that there's probably evidence of things underneath the ocean that you could see clearly with Google Earth if they were to show it. Because it does look like, if you look, it looks like there's two giant pyramids there. I mean, underneath the water, and there's definitely a freshwater, what used to be a lake, a gigantic lake or reservoir. And, I mean, you think about Atlantis, and the capital of Georgia is Atlanta, and it's right off the coast of there. And, you know, they also found off the coast, I think, of Cuba or the Dominican Republic, one of the two, somewhere down there, they found a city that's like 1,000 feet down underneath the water.
And
you know, they've been finding all these cities lately.
Well, they have.
Everywhere, and throughout the world, yeah.
Yeah, like, for example, between Okinawa and the main islands of Japan, there's one continuous, very large city underneath the ocean between Okinawa and Japan.
That is very fascinating, too. I mean, it's got those huge blocks. And it's reminiscent. I think what happened is that this is my hypothesis of the situation. The Earth was in an ice age for 80,000 years, okay? And during that time period, the weather was relatively normal for that whole 80,000 years, that they didn't have many, you know, variations of their weather. And that allowed the people that lived along the equator and through the Atlantis region to advance to a very technical level because the weather was relatively normal. And then all of a sudden what happened is the ice cap started melting and we started going into this warm period. And I believe the people of Atlantis saw the ocean levels rising and spanned out around the globe. That's why they were at war with many nations when it happened. And, you know, they were doing basically what the United States is doing. You know, they were at war with the globe, trying to, you know, get as much resources and things as possible. Right. And then something happened. There was a massive meltwater pulse, and the oceans rose 200 feet. There's question of whether it happened over the course of a couple of years or a couple of hours, but the oceans basically rose 200 feet very quickly, and I think that that's when all chaos broke loose, and that's when the story of Atlantis happened, when the ocean just rose up and took it, and those people went on to make Easter Island, Egypt, you know, all the pyramids in Egypt, and all the various, you know, monuments around the world that look the same.
Absolutely. We got one of our research team here calling, Sheldon from Tucson. Go ahead, Sheldon.
Well, hello, guys. Yeah,
hey,
John.
Sheldon.
Hey, John, did you get that email I sent you before your show started about the spiral-shaped asteroid discovery?
I did. I did get that. Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah, this asteroid was discovered yesterday on the Catalina Sky Survey down here where I am in Tucson. They're calling it a spiral-shaped asteroid, and as you know, I'm one of the people out there that think Planet X is coming up between the main asteroid belt and Jupiter at this point in time, and then for this to all of a sudden show up here on spaceweather.com, there may be some dot connector to what Lucas is into with the research on the spirals.
It may be. It may very well be the case.
I think that all those ancient people saw a spiral. I mean, for them to draw the same thing and for it to affect their life so tremendously that they would spend hours and hours of their life carving in hard granite a spiral shape, that obviously they didn't just sit there in 5 minutes and do it. It took them a long time to do some of these spirals. So it must have affected their lives tremendously for them to spend that much time to do that.
Yeah, and for spaceweather.com to be posting this, it must be a hot story for some reason why they're calling it a spiral asteroid. I thought you might want to check it out when you get a chance.
Okay. Well, that it, Darrell? Well, so that is it for now, Sheldon?
Did you, John, did you get to check about that, the death of that astronomer, Dr. Brian Marsden? He was the supervising astronomer of the Astrophysics Smithsonian in Cambridge.
No, I haven't gotten anything on that. Have you?
Well, I talked to John DiNardo about it, and the guy did die from leukemia. He got pneumonia on top of the leukemia that he was, what they say he was suffering from. But, you know, here's a guy that's going to be keeping really close track on new asteroid, new comet discoveries and stuff like that. And as this event gets closer, maybe, like you said, they, you know, they'll just eliminate certain people until they think, as long as they can hold
out. Right. Well, of course, I don't know if he was trying to go public about the 10th planet or not. I don't have that knowledge.
Yeah, who knows, but have a good day, guys.
Okay, thanks for calling, Sheldon.
Yep. All right, take care.
Yeah, anyway, Lucas, where were we?
I don't necessarily know if they kill so many, you know, people do die. It's a natural thing of life. And,
that's right.
You know, not everybody that dies has been murdered by the powers that be.
That's true.
Apparently, yeah. Some people are, you know, but for the most part, I really don't think. I think they're in the last phases of the preparation right now, and they don't really care. You know, there are a lot of people out there promoting this agenda that the elites want to kill off the world population, and I don't believe that whatsoever.
Right.
I think that they're just going to let this event do it. You know what I mean? They're just going to wait till that's why it's called the New World Order. It's for the whole new world.
Right. Right. Well, this event will kill off a large portion of the population. The powers that be eventually want to have 500 million human beings on this planet and everybody else gone.
They're going to be lucky to be able to retain that many throughout the, you know what I mean? Because it says, like, on the Georgia Guidestones, it says maintain humanity. So that means that the population could get down to a lot less than that. They just want to, those Georgia Guidestones are like the new Ten Commandments of the Age of Aquarius.
They are. One of my associates has been there several times and in person, and he's looked at them and photographed them and read them, and it's, I agree with you. This is a very important matter, these Georgia Guidestones. They really do give an outline of what they hope to accomplish.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, some of those, for one, I believe we could have free energy, okay? Now, the situation is, if you look at a population map of the world, okay, human population went along normal, right? Everything was fine with, for the most part, and then all of a sudden we had the discovery of oil in the late 1800s. And then what happened, as soon as we discovered oil, the population of humans shot through the roof. This chart just goes straight up. And what happens is, until people learn to have as many kids as they can handle, okay, and not have five and six, seven kids, and until they learn that, you know, you have to reproduce what you can, you know, to replace yourself and your wife, that, you know, humanity cannot have free energy. Because if we were given that, what would happen is, with no regulation on population, we would basically just use it, because that's what humans are as a whole, as a mob. You know, the mob doesn't think very smart. You know, individually people are smart, but as a whole, it seems that they, there's just this mob mentality thing. You can see it happening now, and we could have the free energy once we learn to moderate our behavior in some ways that are common sense. You know, it's not common sense to go in and cut down all these forests and deforest the whole area and leave nothing for the animals. And well, it's absolutely ridiculous to do that. But we do it because the whole needs the lumber and the whole needs this and that and the other, and we just do it.
Well, these Ozark forests have been cut over for decades now, and they, oak trees are sort of like corn. They just keep coming back. In fact, the entire Ozarks were covered with pine trees when the first white men came here 200 years ago. And the pines were all cut off in the 19th century, and oak replaced them. And it's a renewable resource. We got a question here, a question from Dave from Canada for Lucas. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, Lucas, how are you tonight?
Hey, hello. How's it going, buddy?
Oh, just great. Thank you for your research. But can you answer me a question? Look, we've been losing a lot of volume of water from the watershed down south. Now, I don't know which way this 10th planet is coming in, but if it comes in from the southern hemisphere and it sucks the water down, are we looking at a rebound, like a boomerang, that it will come like a circle around, like a slingshot? My wife just said, like a slingshot that goes past on the southern hemisphere and then comes back from the northern?
Well, I think, all right, like as the moon goes around the planet,
yes,
a bulge of water follows the moon around the planet. That's called the tide. I mean, the moon is not very dense at all. In fact, it's super light. And look at the giant bulge of water that it causes, 3-4 feet, just for the moon alone. Now, imagine a super dense object coming up through our solar system that's got like a density of like where 1 inch of it weighs thousands of pounds. Now, this thing comes up, okay, it's going to grab a bulge of water down in the southern hemisphere, but the Earth is still going to spin. The Earth is still going to spin on its axis, and it's going to pull that water right over the land. And I think that's what the scenario of where all these flood myths come from, is
right,
that basically this giant wave forms down there.
Actually, the slingshot analogy is actually what some of the astronomers use. It swings in our solar system from the south, goes up over the sun, and then comes back down from the north, going down. Now, how that relates to us remains to be seen, but that is exactly what it does, Dave.
Okay, because we've lost feet and feet, like I'm not talking inches, but feet and feet of water in our northern hemisphere down towards the south. And I realize that if a big object is coming in and sucking like the moon, what will happen in the southern hemisphere is going to rebound back up to our northern hemisphere, correct?
Yeah, I would think so. I would think after it passes the ecliptic, from
yeah,
you know, the it's going to cause the water to come north, and you know, think about all these sinkholes opening up everywhere. I mean, there's sinkholes opening up under rivers, you know, and that's probably why a lot of the water is disappearing, going down into holes.
Oh, wow. You didn't make my night. Thank you, Lucas.
Okay.
Thank you
for your call,
Dave.
We appreciate it. Maybe we need to talk a little bit about the effects of the 10th planet. The The Bible records this, the most recent event would be during Moses' passage, the Nile turning red, the manna from heaven. Those are pretty well established as effects of the 10th planet. But the main one we're concerned about, of course, would be a pole shift. A pole shift more than 1 or 2 degrees would disrupt all this water at the equator, along with the gravitational effect of the 10th planet, could cause that water to move and become tidal waves, which could be several hundred feet high or even 1,000 feet high or even higher. And there's evidence of that having happened in the past, isn't there, Lucas?
Oh, most definitely. Not only is there over 600 flood myths from around the world, but there's definitely, you know, archaeological evidence of it. You know, there's shells in high places where they shouldn't be.
Right.
And, you know, there's definitely evidence that there was, especially that those Bosnian pyramids, that tells you right there that they didn't build those pyramids underneath the mountains. What happened, it looks like, is that at one point in time, that whole area flooded, and then it left a sediment of a couple feet, and then as the water receded, you know, plants and grass and trees started to grow, and that's what you got. You got the mountain, basically a couple feet of dirt on top of a pyramid.
Now, I've never talked to a geologist about my area, but down here in the deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks, we have areas that have granite boulders strewn about. When I say boulders, some of them are the size of a basketball, others are the size of a small house, just laying about, strewn about on top of the ground for in no apparent, just kind of a random fashion. And granite doesn't, you know, that's not the way granite occurs naturally. And and it's always been a mystery to me as to how these huge granite boulders can just be strewn about on the ground haphazardly like that.
Well, when you got a mile-high wave, and it'll wash those things like they're pebbles in a river.
Well, actually, my little creek here, and I'm sitting about 100 feet from it, is typically ankle-deep water, maybe 10 or 12 inches. I've seen rocks that weigh 400 and 500 pounds wash downstream when this creek gets up, and that's not a big creek. And at flood stage, it may be 6 or 8 feet deep, but that water's moving incredibly fast.
Oh, yeah, and it's got a lot of force behind it, and it'll push boulders, because what it does is that they basically ride on the other little stones, like little ball bearings, you know,
Once they get moving, they pick up momentum, and they just bounce along on those other stones. You're right. That's exactly what happens. In fact, you've got seashells in your backyard, don't you?
Oh, yeah, and that's one thing that, you know, that really led me down was seeing those shells, you know, wondering, why are those shells in higher elevations in Texas where there's no water and hasn't been water for you know, millions and millions of years, but yet there's shells on the surface and just under the surface of the ground? And
well,
that made
obviously,
no sense
it wasn't,
because,
obviously it was not millions and millions of years, because these aren't fossil the shells, they are the shells.
Yeah, those were washed in here at some time thousands of years ago. You know, you were talking about the biblical aspect of it. So many things happened at that same exact time period around the world. It wasn't just, you know, over in Egypt in that region, but, I mean, there was all the civilizations of the world basically collapsed at that time period and had to restart. And what was interesting is that the Egyptian calendar was 360. Now, this to me makes a lot of sense. The Egyptian calendar was 360 days, the temperature of the Earth was 1.5 degrees hotter, and the ocean levels were 17 feet higher at that time period, 3,700 years ago.
Right,
okay.
Right.
And then all of a sudden this event happened, and then the orbit changed, the ocean levels went down 17 feet, and the temperature went down 1.5 degrees. So it
That's
seems
amazing.
Like something pulled us away from the sun.
I think I hear music. I do. Everybody stay tuned and call the numbers 800-313-9443. We'll be right back.
You've got an inside corner on the truth, thanks to John Moore and the Republic Broadcasting Network. To talk to John Moore live on the air, call 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 12th day of December. Lucas, we got a caller on hold here. Steve from Buffalo. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, guys. How you doing? I got a question. I've seen a few different maps, you know, disaster area maps that show the Great Lakes area, particularly where I'm at, as being a safe zone. However, you know, with the Great Lakes being here, I wonder how, you know, a tidal wave would affect them and, you know, what you guys think is, as far as would it be a safe zone or not.
Okay. Well, Steve, have you seen my map in my article, or my DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You?
I didn't, no.
Okay. Well, my map comes from the U.S. Navy. It's a classified map. And there's two parts to answer your question. One is the geology and where the water's going to be and not going to be. The other is has to do with more other matters such as your growing season, the distance from major population centers, things like that. Now, is it possible to drive to New York City from where you are on half a tank of fuel, 150 miles or so?
Oh, no. No, we're 600 miles away from New York.
600 miles? Okay.
Well, yeah, I've never been to New York City.
Well, that's good. You don't want to be within a half a tank of fuel of any major population center. And then that's a good thing. So you might be doing okay there. Lucas, you got any comments?
Well, I don't, you know, I kind of tried to get away from telling people where to go or what's going to happen, because I've never survived the apocalypse before, honestly, and I don't what's going to happen. You know, I just know that some object is going to affect what I was saying right before we went on break. It's really the basis of my whole theory is that this object, if the days were 360 and then they went to 365, something grabbed the Earth and pulled us away from the sun and changed our orbit, added
right.
five more days to our orbit.
Right.
So that would explain why some of the places that got 3 days of darkness, you know, the Earth would be pretty much frozen in place during that time period. It was being pulled away. And I think that's what caused the ice ages. We just get pulled further away from the sun, and the Earth goes through these different steps. It takes, like, you know, 5,000 years to go into an ice age. And then basically each time we go down, you know, a degree and a half colder, a degree and a half colder, until we're down 6 degrees colder than normal each time this event happens. And so I don't, you know where to go. I'm about 2.5 hours from the coast, and I had talked to one of the world's leading geomorphologists in an email. It's a study of big waves and things like that, and I just wanted to know if a wave hit the East Coast, a mile-high wave, how long it would take to reach Texas, and he told me 8 to 12 hours. So I was like, well, I got 8 to 12-hour notice.
All right, right.
Wow.
Well, Steve, getting back to your question, the U.S. Navy says the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks is a safe haven, and thousands of Navy veterans have moved here when they retired. There's no guarantees, however. There are no guarantees of any place being safe.
Mm-hmm. Now, you guys were talking about the something grabbing the Earth and pushing it out of the orbit. Now, I know there's a big movement now with, I believe it's called geocentrics, if I'm not mistaken, where the a lot of Christians are moving to believe that the solar system revolved around the Earth type thinking. Now, have you guys ever factored that into the theories of anything?
I thought Galileo pretty much did away with that.
Well, there's
another pretty good thing that led me on to that was the Sumerians. The Sumerians knew all the planets and that the planets went around the sun, and then all of a sudden we forgot that and started thinking around the planets, everything went around Earth. I mean, that's one thing that led me to this. It's like, how did we lose that basic knowledge that Earth was round and that it went around the sun?
We got a break, gentlemen. Everybody hold on. We got to get through the break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It's the second hour of our show here on today, December 12th, Sunday, 2010. Steve, you're still there, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, now, where are we going from here? What's your next question?
Well, like I was mentioned about wave there that he was talking about hitting Texas. Now, I was kind of curious as to how far inland up north is it projected to come, like, as far as, like, Ohio, you know, further in? Where do they project that?
Right, right. Well, there's a lot of unknowns here. Lucas, when I'm going to turn over to you here in a moment. I mentioned off the air this part of the Canary Islands. It could break loose, and if it did, it would generate a wave that would inundate all the low-lying areas on the east coast of North America. That's one of a number of things that we're concerned about. We don't know if this will happen, first of all. We don't know when it would happen, and we don't know how large the wave would be. And, of course, there could be more than one wave as well. Lucas, go ahead and jump right in there.
Yeah, there are too many unknowns to know anything about where any waves are going to go or anything. I would just think that if I wouldn't want to live on the coast, I'd tell you that. I wouldn't want to live with 100 miles of the coast at least. Wow. And you know, I think even a couple hundred miles is risking it. But, those coasts are very unsafe. Anything can happen, whether it just be a regular old tsunami from an earthquake or an asteroid hitting a planet. I mean, imagine, we're not even taking into the account that this object is going to be, supposedly NASA just said on their website that there's an object out there hurtling comets in our direction. I mean, things could hit the ocean. You think of a comet or asteroid hitting anywhere in the ocean of significant size, it's going to cause a ripple effect around all the coastlines of the entire world.
Right, right. There's our break. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 12th day of December. Steve, I think we've covered all your questions, haven't we?
Yes, you have. I appreciate it.
We really appreciate your calling. We really appreciate your listening. Thank you, sir. Lucas, these people want to know what's going to happen, and I struggle with this. I know you struggle with it. I want to help people the best I can. All we can go on is what's happened in the past without making any precise predictions for the future. Would that be an accurate thing to say?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. By if you get too much in the game of predicting things, then you tend to be wrong most of the time, I've seen with these people. So it's just best to try and, be prepared with provisions and knowledge. One thing that's going to be a real commodity in the new world is skilled labor. Don't let anybody make you believe in the least little bit that the elites want to kill off every single person except for the elites. No, they need millions and millions and millions of people to run their machines and their oil wells and all this stuff. Okay, they need skilled labor. And,
right.
That's going to be a commodity in the future because, people that can't put an engine in their vehicle, are going to have somebody that can do it for them. And,
absolutely. And I know you did that yourself just in the last 2 or 3 weeks, didn't you?
Yeah. That's what I wanted to mention. I wanted to apologize to some people because, I've been a little slow on updating the website and things. And I've just, I put so much time into doing this presentation in 2009 that I let a lot of my life's, my personal hobbies and things slack tremendously. Not hobbies, but,
right.
Necessities. And
right.
So I needed to get caught up on things. I just moved to a new place and had to rebuild that engine. That was fun,
absolutely.
But that's all done with.
Okay, and we got another caller here on hold, a regular caller, Snake Eater in Arkansas. Go ahead, Snake Eater.
Yeah, I just wondered if you would recommend people to read Emmanuel Velikovsky's Earth and Upheaval.
Absolutely. It's on my list. Yeah.
It pretty much lays it out that there's not going to be, and I don't want to be around. It's going to be one hell of a ride.
Well, that's very true.
So
that's pretty much what I've done. Throw my hands up in the air and say it's going to be what it's going to be. Just stock up on food and hope for the best. But, what's the use of getting all paranoid and worried about it?
There's going to be no place to go. Just grab a tree and hang on.
Well, I like your attitude there, Snake Eater.
All right. Thank you.
Okay,
have a good one,
you.
John. Love
thank
your
you.
Show.
Appreciate it. Well, preparedness is another way to look at preparedness. It's a form of insurance, and it's not just earth changes. You know, there's lots of things putting us at risk, economic collapse, World War III, an out-of-control, real biological hazard like a real swine flu that really is killing people, as opposed to the make-believe one we had 2 years ago. So there's many reasons to have that the form of insurance that we all call preparedness in the form of stored up food, water filters, heavy duty work clothes, and skills. You touched on something very important there, Lucas. Skills. Metalworking skills, mechanical skills, plumbing skills, woodworking, carpenter skills, the gardening skills, dozens and dozens of skills. Skills of a welder, for example, or and anything related to health and medical treatment. They're all skills that will always be in demand and always be valuable, won't they?
Oh, most definitely. In fact, that's not going to go away at all, because no matter what level this brings us down to, whether we go back down to the close to the Stone Age, there's still going to be need for people to build things and rebuild what's left and try and pick up pieces and put it all back together.
I have a friend. He's one of my our investors here where I live, and he comes out and cuts the grass. And if the lawnmower, the coil goes out in a lawnmower, he takes the coil off his Ford Ranger pickup truck, puts it on a lawnmower, and continues cutting the grass.
There you go.
I've seen him do this. And then when the day's over, he puts the lawnmower on the trailer, takes the coil off, puts it back on the Ford Ranger, and drives home.
Well, that's great. I learned my mechanic skills from an old guy named Lester Rittenhouse, who's probably passed away now. He was in his 70s back when I was 16. And, you know, he taught me a lot about mechanics, and, you know, this guy was a genius. He actually took, you can take your air conditioning unit, just take the reeds out of it, and you can turn it into an air compressor in your vehicle. Just hook up some lines to it and turn on your air conditioning. You have an air compressor that'll pump 200 and some odd pounds of pressure.
No kidding.
You know, there's all kinds of things you can do with these. He made go-karts out of Ford truck starters. They would do like 35 miles an hour. I kind of grew up in a little race town. I used to date Mario Andretti's niece back when I was 15 years old. And I didn't live very far from him. I kind of grew up around a lot of racing people.
Well, the people, these guys and men and women involved in the racing, it's a whole subculture unto itself. And they eat, live, sleep, and breathe internal combustion engines. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I never really got deep into it. Like, I don't watch racing or anything, but I always liked fast cars and muscle cars and things like that.
Well, that just shows you're an American male. That's all that shows.
grown up like that. But we are in interesting times, and I thank the creator that at least I could exist at this point in time. Whether I, you know, get washed away by a mile high wave or whatever happens, you know, at least I could be here in this point in time to be a generation of people that haven't seen this happen for 3,600 years.
Well, it looks like we're going to be part of that generation. Now, the title of your DVD is The Destroyer Star and the Future of Mankind. This is available, ladies and gentlemen, at World Wide Web, rabbitholenumeral2.com, rabbitholenumeral2.com. And that's how much was that again there, Lucas?
It's $32.
Yeah,
with shipping included.
Right. Is there a phone number you want to give out also?
No, I don't really have a contact number on the website, but that's just mainly for people to call in when they,
Okay, that's fine. What other interesting let's see, you and I were talking the other day about these canals, man-made canals down in Louisiana, and then I did some research and found that there's actually all along the East Coast in different places, there's ancient man-made canals.
Yeah, and that was really interesting. Coincidences do exist, because I looked at the Coast to Coast AM website, and I saw they were going to have a guest on about these ancient canals. So I went back to his website and started reading up on them and was real interested in these ancient canals in New Orleans and all that. And the coincidence was, I literally get done reading his website, turn on the History Channel, and start watching a documentary about Thomas Jefferson. And they talk about how he's fighting the British, and in 1813, the way he won is he constructed this huge moat and put the mouth.
Andrew Jackson, not Jefferson.
Andrew Jackson. And basically, he connected it to a series of pre-existing canals. And I was thinking, hey, 1813, there were pre-existing canals there. So they pretty much said it right in that documentary.
Pretty amazing. Yeah, I've looked at the satellite images of these canals in Louisiana, and there's some up farther north, the East Coast. They're definitely man-made. They're straight as an arrow. They have right angles and do things that nature would never do.
Yeah, that shows a sophisticated society transporting goods from one place to another.
Well, that's exactly what it is. Canals moving water just for irrigation purposes, typically they wouldn't be more than 10 or 12 feet wide. But some of these canals are 100 feet wide, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, and they're miles long. So they were moving canal boats just like we used to do, and we still do. They were using.
Well, the Native Americans, when Caucasians came here, dug out canoes or canoes of different sorts. That was about it. That was about the level of sophistication for waterborne craft that I'm aware of. Is that your knowledge also?
Yeah, and here's another interesting thing. There's a petroglyph out in Chaco Canyon, right, that shows a spiral, but what it shows is it shows a spiral above a 10-story building. It shows like a sky scene from a city. Right.
Really?
You see these different buildings with windows in them and stuff, and they show the spiral in the air above it. And back then, when those petroglyphs were made, who had 10-story buildings back then?
Well, even Europeans didn't. I don't believe. It's difficult to build with stone unless you've got steel reinforced superstructure. It's difficult to build very many stories tall with stone. It really is quite difficult.
However they move those, I mean, people talk about the Great Pyramid and all that. I mean, it's an amazing feat in itself, but there are other stones that have been moved on this planet that are way bigger than the ones that are in the Great Pyramid, and we can't even move those things today with all the machinery and equipment we have. So they must have had some sort of ultrasonic technology, basically. People theorize that it vibrates and puts a thin layer of air between underneath it and whatever they want to move, and that they can move these large objects that way.
Right. Well, that's one of the theories about the Coral Castle down there in Florida that this one man built by himself, moving massive stones by himself. And there's been a lot of speculation for decades about how that was done as well. And the same theories came up about using sound to move objects.
Yeah, there's more to technology that we don't understand today
Hold on, Lucas, hold on. We got a break coming up. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
John Moore is as close as your telephone. Call him right now, 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back to this J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 12th day of December. Ladies and gentlemen, I was talking to Freeze-Dry Guy the other day, and he directed me to go to the Mountain House website, and I confirmed what he said. Mountain House Foods are the largest manufacturer of freeze-dried food in the world. Mountain House Foods is no longer selling number 10 cans of freeze-dried food to the general public. They're only taking care of their preferred dealers, like Freeze-Dry Guy. We're not sure why this is. We know that it's true, and anybody can confirm this. Just go to the Mountain House website, and you can confirm that you won't be able to buy number 10 cans of freeze-dried food from Mountain House. However, Freeze-Dry Guy has two warehouses full. He'd be glad to help you top off your inventory. His December special is economy-sized buckets of breakfast and entree units, and hearty-sized buckets of breakfast and entree units. The economy size starts out at 15 days, goes up to a full year for one person. And the same thing with the hearty size. Start out at 15 days and go up to a full, 12 full months. Now, freeze-dried guy and his people, they'll be at work out there on the left coast tomorrow morning, Pacific time. I'd give them a call about 9 o'clock Pacific time. The toll-free number is 866-404-3663. I say again, 866-404-3663. Website is freezedryguy.com, and, of course, there's a link to my website, thelibertyman.com. Lucas, during the break, I was asking you if you had read the email I sent you, and you told me you're recovering from an attack on your computer. Is that correct?
Yeah, before I had moved, yeah, somebody managed to get up into my system and install some boot sector viruses on my computer, and so I'm currently in the process of trying to eliminate all that malarkey out of my system here.
Oh, boy.
But, yeah, it happens. What are you going to do?
Well, once you get it fixed, your emails will be recoverable. You'll get my article, The Gulf Stream Has Stopped. And the more evidence I see, Lucas, the more I am absolutely convinced, as if I need more convincing, that what's going on in Europe right now is a consequence of the Gulf Stream having stopped. The worst winter in 1,000 years in Moscow, the worst winter in 222 years in Norway, the worst winter in living memory in Germany. It's happening as we speak in December 2010. Have you made any of these observations yourself?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. They are getting slammed. In fact, last year there were some satellite images of Europe completely frozen solid. It looked like an Arctic nation.
Right. Well, that was the beginning. You're right. That was the beginning of it. The Gulf Stream was still moving then, but it's been slowing down incrementally for years. And last winter
your one caller was talking about how they got 6 feet of snow. When we could tell that the ice age has officially started is when snow doesn't disappear in the summertime and starts to stay around and starts to build up next year.
Right,
That's what
happens. Exactly right. Dr. Deagle is saying the exact same thing, and I ditto that myself. The summers will grow shorter. We may start seeing the English Channel freezing over in the not-too-distant future, maybe not this year. But one of the things that's at risk for all these people in the United Kingdom and France, they don't bury the pipes deep enough. So well before we have July, snow in July in the United Kingdom and France, well before then, people will have to abandon these areas because tens of millions of people can't live without potable water for drinking, bathing, and fighting fires. And they cannot live. They'll have to migrate and go someplace else.
So basically, the Queen's going to move to America.
She has a number of choices, Canada, North America, Australia. We got some callers on hold here. Larry from Arkansas. Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, hi, gentlemen. Lucas, I had a question for you. You know, years ago, of all people, Jay Leno, I mean, this is like 15 years ago when he first started or something, he had a guy bring a machine, a man-made machine. It was kind of real primitive looking. It was like a circular ball made out of cane or something, and he said he could produce 8 times as much energy. He was using a battery, and his battery would make 8 times more energy than the battery would use.
And I remember that, to be honest.
Yeah, and I never heard anything about it ever again. I just wondered.
Yeah,
if you
basically
knew anything
about it. It was like a series of spinning tops, like the gyros, that he had hooked up, and that he could power this big, huge fan off of a 9-volt battery, which was amazing. And I never heard it because, said before,
you know, Lucas and Larry, when that show was over, there was half dozen black Crown Vicks out back waiting for this guy.
Well, yeah, like I said before, man, we are humanity. Humanity as a whole cannot handle free energy right now. Until we learn to regulate ourselves a little bit and control ourselves, I don't think that we can handle the free energy until we it's important. I mean, all you got to do is look at that population map and compare it to the oil discovery, and you see humans get out of control once they get their hands on free stuff. So,
well, it's a cultural thing. You know, we us Caucasians in North America and the UK tend to be self-regulating and not having lots of kids. These third world countries, having children is the only form of social security they've got. Well, anyway, we got a break coming up. Everybody, when the calls are just lining up here, stay tuned. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 12th day of December. Well, we do have Christmas season coming up, ladies and gentlemen. If you have a friend, a spouse, a sibling, maybe an adult child living in the matrix, they don't quite understand things that you and I do. My DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You, has a proven track record of helping convince people that the world they live in is not quite what they think it is. That the world we live in is not quite what we believe it to be. It's a great vehicle to help wake people up, and that's the reports I get from all over the country and the United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand, basically the English-speaking world. Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You, available at my website, thelibertyman.com. I do have a 24-hour order line, 24/7. That's 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Lucas, we got the calls stacking up here like airplanes at LaGuardia. You ready to take some calls?
Sure.
Okay, we got Tom from Brooklyn. Go ahead, Tom.
Hello, John. Hello, Lucas. How are you fellas doing?
Real good.
Great. John, I just on a couple quick sniglets here before I get to the main issue. One is, do you know that Plum Island is for sale? Talk about some toxic
really? Waste.
Yep, Plum Island is for sale.
And well, you're up there. You're not far from it. It's
I've been there.
You've been there.
Yeah, I've been there. I've been to Brookhaven. I've been through all there, all through.
Now tell me, if it's for sale, does that mean they've abandoned it already?
It's been decommissioned, and it's viewable. But I'll tell you something right now. I wouldn't go anywhere near that place.
You don't want a little anthrax on the side, huh? A little foot and mouth disease?
Let me tell you something. I guarantee you, if you put a house on there, your kids would come down with something they never seen before.
Oh, yeah.
You understand? And whatever has leached into the groundwater at that particular place is probably so toxic, but with things that they couldn't even come up with a cure for.
Well, a lot of people don't know what you and I are talking about. Plum Island, ladies and gentlemen, they started out about 50 years ago, Tom?
Uh-huh.
Something like that.
The thing is, you want to know something? The first things that happened with West Nile virus, with the West Nile virus, there was a... At one time, I didn't think it was coming from Plum Island, but it infected a bunch of kids at a Boy Scout reservation that's just... across the water from it.
Really?
Yeah, and that was the first, they started with the mosquitoes and all of that crap, you know.
Right.
But there's also a very, very big container port and switching yard there. I thought it might have come up from down South America or something, but no, it came out of Plum Island. That was my number one sniglet, okay?
Okay,
my number two sniglet is, you're talking about the freeze line, okay? Certain places go for 24-inch freeze line because of the temperate zone.
Right.
I suggest anybody anywhere in North America that is putting in a new home to make sure your freeze line is 40 inches or better, okay? Because you don't know what we're going to come into. Every time the mainstream says global warming, I go out and buy more thermal underwear.
Okay. I like to hear that. Okay.
Okay, those were my two little sniglets. Now here comes the big one. My bunker, I call my flea to house, is in the coal region of Pennsylvania. Here's something that most people don't realize. When you go down 200 feet, when you get down into a coal shaft, it has a constant temperature of 56 degrees, whether it's July or February 10th, you know? It's 56 degrees. So if, in fact, we actually had some cataclysmic situation, I would erect a tent 200 feet below and just heat it with a candle to stay alive.
Right.
It would be using much less resource than trying to maintain a surface home.
Absolutely.
Well, your body will get used to 56 degrees in no time. A couple years and your body will adapt to 56 degrees. And
I got news for you, man. I'm on fixed income. I'm not doing much more than that in the house.
Okay,
so I know, actually, you do slow down and you can get hypothermic at 56 degrees. So you dress accordingly within the tent that you encapsulate yourself in.
Right.
And you're only doing that tent, not because of anything, but just to retain the heat in an environment that, you know, you can do your daily activities and your exercises and everything and do your little surface stuff and then just come down. Just come down. Like I said, you use a lot less resources with Earth as your headquarters.
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
God bless you guys.
Thank you, Tom. We appreciate it.
Take care.
Well, Tom made some good points there, Lucas. Of course, you don't need to be 200 feet below ground. A root cellar that's got 3 feet of dirt on it, on top of it will give a lot of moderating effect to the outside temperature. Do you have any thoughts to jump in there with, Lucas?
No, I mean, it's definitely, you know, a regulated environment. It's going to stay the same, and that's probably your best bet.
Back in the 70s, we had a surge of what we call earth-sheltered homes, where people were building concrete homes and covering them up with 3 feet of earth, and they're still being built. A friend of mine was building them back in the 70s and in the 80s, and they became quite popular for a while, and I don't see too many of them at the moment. These thin-shelled concrete dome homes is another way to have a moderated environment and be very energy efficient. Got Jim from Missouri. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, hey, John, how are you?
Yes, sir, good.
You know, I'm a seeker of truth, and I was listening to another host on RBN last week, Michael Rivero, and he made the comment that they were experiencing tar balls up in, I think it was Ireland, and totally just said, well, no, this stuff about the Gulf Stream stopping is not true, otherwise they wouldn't be there. And I called in and I said, well, you know, I've been listening to John Moore and for quite a while, and apparently it's been confirmed. And he pretty well poo-pooed that and said, well, no, they're already experiencing tar balls up in Ireland, so, you know, that's a bunch of bull. And then somebody else called in, and they wanted to talk about chemtrails. And as soon as the guy said chemtrails, he was cut off and said, no, you know, that's a bunch of bull. We're not going to talk about it.
Really?
So I was really kind of curious as to who exactly this gentleman is and what your thoughts were on it. But anyway, you were just talking about earth homes.
Right.
You can actually go find, I don't know if you remember this book, John, or not, but it was called The $50 and Up Underground House.
Yeah, well, a friend of mine built one of those, and he's quite cozy in it.
Yeah. Anyway, I'd just like to hear your comments, because I don't know who Michael Rivero is, but I was a little bit upset by his reactions to my comments and the comments of another caller. So I'll get off and listen to you.
Okay. Well, let me, because you're not. I've had people talk to me about this off air, and I've got a young lady helping me as a producer, and she mentioned this to me. Well, the science about the Gulf Stream stopping is very solid. My paper that I wrote, The Gulf Stream Has Stopped, has references to verifiable mainstream scientific sources like the United States Navy, for example, not exactly a tinfoil hat organization. And condensation trails, good grief. I mean, I've been seeing condensation trails since I was a little boy when the first Boeing 707s came out. Normal condensation trails, or what we also call contrails, they evaporate and go away in a matter of seconds, a minute at the most. The contrails that we're concerned about don't go away, and that's not normal. That's not normal for the condensation trails from aircraft being 5 and 6 miles high. It's not normal for them to linger and linger and linger and become clouds. That's abnormal. And we all know that. There's a lot of speculation about who's doing it, why they're doing it. The contents, like ethylene dibromide, things like that, that are extremely toxic, that's from documentation on that. Who's doing this and why they're doing it? A lot of speculation. We do know that clouds have a moderating effect on the temperature at the surface of the Earth. We do know that. Maybe they're trying to cool off the Earth. Lucas, jump right in there.
Well, my research shows that, you know, in a lot of these testings that there's high levels of barium. And barium is used to absorb X-rays. And if it's a, you know, my personal belief is that there is a planet and a brown dwarf star, a mini solar system. And the brown dwarf star is going to emit lots of X-rays. And to me, I think that they're spraying it to absorb X-rays. I think that's why cancer is up all across the world in everything. I mean, not just people, but, I mean, animals, you know, pets. Cancer is just everywhere.
Skin cancer especially.
You know, these subatomic particles flying off of this star, I believe, you know, they're subatomic. They fly right through your body. And when they hit your DNA, they break your DNA strands. And that's what causes the cancer, I believe, in that they're spraying these chemtrails to absorb as much radiation. Because they're trying to protect their own butts. I'm not saying that they're looking out for the general public, right. But I'm saying they've got families, too, and they want to, you know, they want to be able to exist in a semi-radiation-free world themselves. So
absolutely. Okay, let's go to our next. Is Jim gone now?
Am I still on?
Oh, go ahead, Jim. Yeah.
Well, John, I'm in southwest Missouri. I'm in the Springfield area.
Right.
And I've been watching I've been watching the skies since I was a little kid, and you know, I've even sat there and I've pointed out to friends of mine. I said, okay, now watch that airplane, and watch how the trail dissipates as it goes along. I do you see that? And I said, that's a contrail. That's normal. I go, but look at all the lines in the skies, and look at that plane right there. And boy, they've been nailing Southwest Missouri something big.
Right, right.
And it's plain as day. And I'm like, and I ask him, well, obviously you see they're spraying something.
Right.
Well, yeah, but I'm not convinced on what it is. And I said, but that's not the point. The point is, what is it that they're spraying? You don't know. And
exactly.
They just, you know, it's like cognitive dissonance, you know?
I know, it is. It reminds me of when the Spanish conquistadors, when they first sailed up to the coast of South America, the Indians looked out and the ships were right in front of them, but they couldn't see them. Literally.
Yeah.
They could not see the ships. It's cognitive dissonance at its best.
Yeah. Anyway, I appreciate you.
Okay. Y'all. Thank you, Jim. We appreciate it.
Sure.
Got an offline comment here from Warner in Canada that the tar balls are being pushed to Ireland by the wind, not the ocean currents. Thank you, Warner. We appreciate that. The United Kingdom is in deep doo-doo. Paris is shut down. Moscow is having the worst winter since the year 1010, maybe longer. That's as far back as the records go. I know around here, weather records go back about 120, 130 years. There's not many places on the planet that have weather records for 1,000 years. Moscow does. And so, ladies and gentlemen, we're off to the races. The Gulf Stream has stopped. Winter has not officially begun. It'll be a week from Tuesday, the first day of winter. And we're already experiencing severe winter-like conditions. And let's see, we got Dave from Montana. Go ahead, Dave.
Thank you. That one guy, if that big wave comes, I wouldn't want to be in a hole in the ground. I don't know. But you were talking about the big wave, you know, being pulled by the planet that's going to pass by or whatever, the dark star.
Right.
Wouldn't it give itself away by, like, each day it gets closer, like 2 feet more, 4 feet more, 6 feet more?
Well, we hope so. Here's what the Navy told these men in these classified briefings, Dave, that these oceans would come up over a period of about a month.
So right, and then it would peak and dissipate, right?
Yes, sir.
Amount of time that it arose, right?
I hope. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
So I'm in the
Rocky. Yeah, right when it crosses the ecliptic is when it'll probably be the highest, right? When it crosses that plane where Earth and Sun's gravity grabs each other, I think that's when it'll be the highest point.
So for a month we'll be getting bombarded, like, and people will be... I'm up in the Rockies. I'm at 4,000 feet in the middle of the Rockies. You think the Rockies would be like a breaker or it'd go right over? Unless you're at 7,000.
Well, there's precedents, and we keep finding. In fact, there was another find fairly recently, and Velikovsky's seen some of these things personally.
There's a lot of mountains around here that looks like water went down in stages all over the place.
Right. Well, that's very likely what happened there, Dave.
Right.
Very likely.
And if you remember Wounded Knee, there was a guy called Wachova. He had a vision, and he said that a big wave is going to come. Wash all the white people away, and then go back to the way.
I've befriended some individuals in the Western Cherokee Nation. All these native folks, the indigenous Indians, as we call them, they all have these oral histories that are very similar to the Hopi prophecies and include what you just said, Dave, about these waves coming. They do.
Yeah. Well,
and what's interesting is you find at the base of the Rockies, right, you find all these mass dinosaur graves. Okay, that would tell you that at some point in time, big waves washed all these dinosaur carcasses up to the base of the Rockies and then left them there in a big pile. And then over years, they got covered up, created these.
Yeah, all jumbled together, all these different, not just dinosaurs, but saber-toothed tigers and mammoths all jumbled up together that died at the same time.
Would it pull up big lakes?
They wash over the lakes.
Well, like in them first couple of passes, like that first week, would the lakes kind of like bubble, you know, like bubble up, not bubble up, but get pulled up a little?
Well, I don't know about that.
I don't know.
I don't know. Simply don't
There's
know.
So many variables in all this. It's like, and we don't, you know, honestly, we're not even 100% sure this thing is going to happen. Just because it happened in the past doesn't mean that this object didn't spin out of orbit and go as far as you.
It makes sense, you know, because there's something going on, you know, because around here you could tell, like, there was at one time levels of water just on the sides of the mountain, you know, And right here, where I'm at, is one of the it's the headwaters of the Columbia. It was where the big Missoula Sea was. You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
Dave, hold on. We got a break coming up. Everybody, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
John Moore is taking your telephone calls right now on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Pick up the phone and join in the conversation. Call 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And thanks for listening to RBN.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. We're visiting with Lucas today. The title of his DVD, his best-selling DVD, is The Destroyer Star and the Future of Mankind, available at his website, World Wide Web, rabbitholenumeral2.com. rabbitholenumeral2.com. Dave, do you have any final comment here real quick?
Would it affect volcanoes? You know.
Oh, okay. Let me answer that real quick, and we do thank you for your call, Dave. Your risk up there, Dave, is... Yellowstone. Yellowstone is a supervolcano. It reaches out to 600 miles if it really blows its top. Do you have any quick follow-up on that, Lucas?
Oh, yeah. Magma is magnetic, and it's liquid, and I have a feeling it's already affecting volcanoes.
In fact, we had a brand-new volcano on the Kamchatka peninsula come up off the coast of right there in Russia just in the last week or so. Lucas, we're just about out of time.
Did you see the one off of Pakistan?
I did not.
I'm sorry.
But I did not, but I need to check it out, and we're just about out of time. I don't want the music to catch us off guard here, Lucas. Thank you, as always, for your time, and keep up the good work, and I'll be in touch.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Lucas. And, of course, that's Lucas, the author and the producer and developer of The Destroyer Star and the Future of Mankind. And that's at World Wide Web, rabbitholenumeral2.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know why somebody would say the science or doubt the science about the Gulf Stream stopping. It's verifiable mainstream science. And the evidence is in the form of the winter of 2010-2011, which begins a week from Tuesday. The next 4 months is going to be incredible for Western Europe, France, England, Ireland, Scotland, Norway, Germany. All those areas are going to have, all what scientists are saying, the worst winter in centuries. The worst winter in centuries. They're already saying that. And they're also saying that these freak things, they're trying to, in the United Kingdom, by the way, these freak storms are once in a lifetime, and they're just something that will go away and have a normal winter once again. So stay tuned. Next week, I hope to have Jonathan Gray as my guest. We'll see. It'll be a good Christmas show, the Sunday the 19th. Jonathan Gray, the archaeologist from New Zealand. I just finished reading his book, and it has a lot to do with the Bible, and I think you'll find it fascinating. I know I found the book fascinating. And let's see. I guess we're just about, expect to hear the music here momentarily. It's always good to visit with you folks. I'll be on the Micro Effect at 0700 Central Time tomorrow morning, Monday through Friday, and visiting with Dr. Deagle on Genesis, the third hour of his show every Friday. And the Intel Hub, well, we're working on getting the Intel Hub back up and running. We might be doing a rebroadcast of the Sunday show here on Republic Broadcasting on the Intel Hub. That's a possibility. We're looking forward to getting back on the Intel Hub once I get everything squared away over there. Read my article at my website, thelibertyman.com. That's it for today. You all be safe out there. A wonderful week. Buy lots of ammunition, and God bless America.